Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Thursday, March 30th, 2017. The time is 9 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning is Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Machicki will not be here this morning. He's away on other state business. On today's agenda, we have pension obligation bonds at Senate Bill 97. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Ms. Kramer, if you could walk us through Senate Bill 91.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Laura Kramer, and I am staff to Senator McKinnon and the Senate Finance Committee. Before you today, Senate Bill 97 on pension obligation bonds, it does two things. It reduces the state's authority to issue pension obligation bonds from $5 billion to $2.5 billion. And it also requires that the department would submit a proposal to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee on their plan for issuing those pension obligation bonds. The purpose for this is to bring the item before the legislature for their consideration. It doesn't restrict the administration, the executive branch, from moving forward, but it does involve the legislature in the process. So if you'd like, Madam Chair, I can walk through a sectional of the bill.
Please.
So the sectional, I'll basically be repeating myself many times. The Department of Revenue, under the Department of Revenue, there are entities that can issue bonds for the purpose of financing or facilitating financing for of government employers' share of unfunded accrued actuarial liability of retirement systems. So, and then it sets up the mechanism for the submitting the proposal to the LBNA committee. So starting with Section 1, this would require a subsidiary that's created under AHFC, which is housed under the Department of Revenue, to submit a proposal to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee for the purposes I just mentioned. Section 2 creates a new subsection outlining the process for submitting to the LBNA committee. Section 3 would require the state bond committees to submit the proposal to LBNA. Section 4 creates the subsection for the process for submitting the proposal to the LBNA committee. Section 5 is the section that amends the amount that they can borrow from $5 billion to $2.5 billion. Section 6 requires the Pension Obligation Bond Corporation to submit the proposal to the LBNA committee. And Section 7 creates the new subsection outlining the process to submit that proposal. Section 8 requires the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority to submit a proposal to the LBNA committee. And Section 9 requires a subsidiary created under the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority to submit a proposal to the LBNA committee. Section 10 creates the new subsection outlining the process for Sections 8 and 9. Section 11 is conforming language for the subsidiary corporation under the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. And Section 13 is conforming language for the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. With that, Madam Chair, that's the walkthrough of the bill.
Is there questions on the structure of the bill? Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Senators, I bring this bill before you and would be happy to make this a Senate Finance Committee bill, should you so choose. During the last legislative cycle, we had a conversation about moving towards indebting ourselves in pension obligation bonds, and there was concern raised through this committee, who submitted comments to myself and to Co-Chairman Hoffman regarding the riskiness about pension obligation bonds. So this is a draft for your consideration that does not take us to zero. I have had members in the legislative body that I've spoken with that would prefer this number to be zero. In no way am I advocating that this is endorsement for issuing pension obligation bonds, but in working with the governor's office, this strikes a balance for the legislature to understand when the market might time right, that and it provides a process that the administration could notify the legislature of their intent, and the administration did notify us last year, I think it was, when they were considering pension obligations. But from my perspective, the legislature responded and felt a bit flat-footed without a process that was established, and so this bill, SB 97, submits a process like we currently use for action during the interim that would allow a process for the Senate and the House through a joint committee, legislative budget and audit, to understand why the administration would be choosing to submit to the financial markets this type of proposal. Is there a desire for me to make this a Senate Finance Committee bill or move forward under the co-chairman's name? Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, I think that it reflects the times that we live in, and it would be a statement for the legislature, and to have it a Senate Finance Committee bill, I think would be would express that statement.
Is there any objections for me moving this from my name to a Senate Finance Committee bill? And I'm not sure how. I'm not sure if I have to reintroduce the bill to do that. So there's going to be some technical maneuvering here, and that's my fault, not anyone else's. Senator Bishop.
No, I concur.
I support it.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I've got grave reservations because we are in. It is reflective of the times that we are in, but the original law was passed during a time where we were in a much different situation, and I'm anticipating in the future we're going to be in a much different situation again, and I'd hate to go ahead and hamstring any future legislature or administrations that's going to be out there that's going to have to operate under these kind of restrictions.
Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Von Imhoff.
Madam Chair, I just have this is my own personal opinion. You know, you spoke earlier about striking a compromise, and you also said that there's some people wish it was a zero. I'll just, you know, I've read quite a bit on these pension obligation bonds, and I'm not going to rehash those, but I'm just going to make one statement. The state of Kansas wishes they would have never done this because they had a $4 billion problem, and today they got a $9 billion problem by issuing POB bonds.
Senator Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff.
Senator Olson, you make a good point. I think what this bill does is a compromise, which Senator McKinnon indicated. It's not zero. It's at least still $2.5 billion. What it allows is just having LBNA just have one extra set of eyes to take a look at it and, again, give this the legislative body time to review. I think it's fair and I think it's reasonable. We're not stymieing the process entirely or eliminating the ability. We're just having another checks and balances in it. I think that's fiscal prudence, so I support it.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate we were all part of this whole process here the last several months, and I appreciate the fact that you allow folks at this table to have differences of opinions, because we reflect the state of Alaska. Could I ask a mechanical question, which will help me better be able to answer the question you had, but when it goes, what would it look like? The governor would propose, let's say, a sale of, the chances are it'll be $2.5 billion. I'm just saying, under that scenario, let's say it's $2.5 billion. How does that proceed? What are the mechanics and how that would proceed through LBNA?
As I understand the structure of the bill, the governor, well, the corporation, the Pension Obligation Bond Corporation, would take the administration's proposal. They would have had to approve it through a resolution already internally to that corporation. They would submit that proposal, whatever it might be, to legislative budget audit 45 days prior to the bond issuance. And the reason that is the reason I've proposed that before you in this structure is because we found out about it about a month beforehand last year, and the governor presented to the legislature and said that they were taking very conservative approaches, and they had actually been working on advancing something for about 2 years and been talking to legislators about taking an opportunity with the market to ride the market up and benefit Alaskans through arbitrage and unfunded liability. So the corporation would submit, LBNA would just have the document. They could approve the document right away so that the administration could advance at a quicker pace. The administration is not prohibited to advance through this legislation. They still could issue the pension obligation bonds. It just gives a notification that's formalized to the legislature.
Just clarification, regardless of the bill, they can still issue whatever they want?
So right now they can do it up to $5 billion. This would limit that authorization to 2.5. I believe it was right around $2 billion, $2.2 billion that was under consideration when the governor assessed it during the last calendar year.
So this bill would not repeal the 2008 bill, or it was 6, it was 8, I think it was 8. This would not repeal that bill.
That is absolutely correct. It reduces the borrowing capacity. So what started our conversation about how to change it was our debt affordability analysis, and on page 5, and this is the draft proposal, so I've read it in depth, and it reflects the $5 billion. And so from anyone from outside credit rating agencies, I believe it's been mentioned that we have this capacity to indebt ourselves by this amount of money. And so my thought was to improve that particular look from the outside authorities, even though it does not count against Alaska's debt-to-credit ratio. It's just a factor of available options that the state has before us to tackle some of the situations that we're dealing with. The reason that the 2.5 was chosen from my perspective is it allows an administration to act if they believe they can in the best interests. It provides a checkpoint so the legislature could call themselves into special sessions if they wanted to take a formal action. As you are aware, Senator Dunleavy, you and I were in contact, as well as other members of this body, with the administration when they brought forward the interest to issue bonds last year. And the governor, working with us and the other body, decided to forego from what they saw as an opportunity to decrease our unfunded liability. But our unfunded liability has also been reduced now and reflected in our financials by the $3 billion that we infused into the fund in the form of cash in the 2015, I believe it's fiscal year 2015, I'm looking if it, in 2015 we did it. It's reflected in our audits now. And so our unfunded liability is sitting at 6.1, I believe, if I'm remembering the numbers correctly, a $6 billion unfunded liability. So $5 billion, if you use the $6 billion and you accepted the different assumptions that are in there, then that would be a huge portion that could be put, from my perspective, at risk in issuing pension obligation bonds, $5 billion against a $6 billion or a $6.1 billion pension liability. Now, I say that, but I want to highlight, because all of you know, and the general public may or may not know, is that has an 8% rate of return assumption, and we all know that that is high in the market, in the world that we live in, for returns. And so if that assumption were to change, our unfunded liability would go up. And so I just highlight that I understand that $6.1 billion of unfunded liability, I believe, underestimates the total liability that Alaska will see in the future. I do want you to know that I did meet with the governor personally on the issue that was before the legislature in this legislative session, saying that there was still trepidation about a $5 billion possible pension obligation issuance. And there has been no deal reached or anything else, but it is my understanding, I've been trying to be forthright with the governor and his staff to say that there is a variety of opinions on this issue, ranging from zero ability and total repeal to a reduction, and I have tried to strike the balance in between of taking the zero and $5 billion right in half to say if that's the right number, then people will support it. Senator Olson, if people think it should be higher, they certainly can make that case. I am hopeful that the governor understands that the legislature has a concern about the $5 billion worth of potential issuance of pension obligation bonds. And it goes to some of the issues that Senator Bishop raised with people hitting the timing wrong and the market wrong and then creating additional liability in the fund versus what they wanted to do, and that was reduce the liability in the fund. Senator Dunleavy, does that answer the question?
Yeah, it was very helpful. Thank you. And two things. So, first of all, I'm not going to object to having it a committee bill. I won't object to that. The other thing is, this is even a $2.5 billion, that's a large sum of money. And most of the time when you have an instrument like this, the people of a state put you in a box, meaning it's they get the right to vote on it, or they put the parameters around it, whether it's constitutional, et cetera, et cetera. This is a large sum of money. I'm glad we're moving in this direction because before this was a $5,000, just we can do it. And I'll just wrap it up by saying this. I know I would be much more comfortable, whatever, you know, however you want to weigh that, if there was a method, because you just mentioned that you could come back in a special session. You said the legislature could come back in special session.
Senator Dunleavy, it provides an opportunity if the legislature wanted to weigh in a formal way enough lead time, that if the legislature wanted to formally oppose that they could. That was not necessary. The governor listened to what the legislature said in the concerns that we raised last year when there was consideration of this item.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Dunleavy, please proceed.
No, I appreciate it. I'm just going to process. Thank you.
So my staff has informed me if we want to make it a committee bill, which is my inclination to do, that we'll have to do a committee substitute. So I'm happy to do that. So we'll do that on Friday. We'll try to have that before the committee on Friday. I would like to open the public hearing so that we can see if Alaskans want to comment on this. I understand that it doesn't satisfy all Alaskans that we heard from. During the last conversation that wanted us to do zero. So with that, I would like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 97. Is there anyone wishing to testify on an act relating to pension obligation bonds? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. My staff informed me it has to be a brand new bill, so we'll withdraw the bill or let it sit. Mr. Mitchell, could you come to the microphone? Mr. Mitchell, if you could identify yourself for the record, and then if you have comments from a debt management perspective or an administrative perspective on this concept, if you would please provide those comments.
Sure. Devin Mitchell, I'm the state's debt manager. I also serve as staff to the Pension Obligation Bond Corporation and was involved in the effort this last fall to issue pension obligation bonds to fund a portion of the public employees' retirement system and teachers' retirement systems' unfunded liabilities. As far as the legislation goes, the proposed legislation, I don't personally see any issue with it, and I don't believe the administration has any issue with it. It's been over the three times that we've looked at the possibility of issuing pension obligation bonds, a collaborative process with the legislature. And so this, like you said earlier, formalizes that. The timelines that you described, a 45-day window, certainly wouldn't be onerous to the bond issuance process I'm not as certain if there were a let's say 44 days went by and then the legislative budget and audit committee objected, then I believe there'd be another 45-day period. So you could have a 90-day period. I'm not sure how that would be resolved if then after 45 days the executive branch can just continue without a convening of the legislature, or if there would be a permanent hold placed on the issuance of the bonds. That's something you guys should talk about and make sure you understand, because I don't at this point. As far as what we were talking about in the fall, it was between a $2.3 and a $3.3 billion issuance. So a $2.5 billion issuance is kind of right in that, what we would have called the sweet spot. We were looking at a 90% funding of the TERS system, which would have gotten us to, which was about an $890 million deposit into the TERS system. You don't want to become overfunded in the retirement trusts, or else there can be negative impacts in extra benefits being paid to folks that people believe already have sufficient benefits. And on the PERS side, the deposit would have been somewhere between that $1.4 and $2.4 billion. There's some nuances within the current structure of the state's participation in funding the retirement systems through the payment on behalf of allowance that we currently have established in Senate Bill 125. And so our focus is really on the unfunded liability. The $6 billion that you were referring to earlier is all basically part of or attributable to that payment on behalf of that the state makes. And so if that's going to continue, and that's how we were looking at it, assuming we earn 8%, there's about $11 billion of payments over the next 23 years that the state's obligated to make. If the state only makes 7%, that number jumps to $19 billion that has to be paid over the next 23 years, and this is as of this last fall. And we were looking at refinancing, assuming we earn 8%, about half of that $11 billion with the $3.3 billion pension obligation bond, and so that would have provided about $5.5 billion of funding of that $11 billion if we earned 8%, and so the benefit was a couple of billion dollars. So, and that's, and like you referred to earlier, the arbitrage idea, the idea that we're going to earn 8%, we're going to borrow, in this case we were looking at a rate below 4%, and that's the game with pension obligation bonds, is that you, if you can, the one thing you can control is your interest rate, and if you can get a low enough interest rate, then you have a high, you can have a relatively high expectation of outperforming that interest rate over a long period of time.
Questions from committee members? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I just wanted to get a little bit of clarification on this particular bill. If the LBNA recommends not to go forward, then the governor or the administration still has the authority to, it says right here, must provide a report specifically for the reasons for doing so. And then it leads to me to assume then that the administration can go ahead up to $2.5 billion against the wishes of LBNA and issue these bonds. Is that correct with this particular bill?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. That's where I said I would need clarification from a legal party, that's not something I typically deal with. So I would imagine it at least would require an additional, because I think there's a requirement to provide additional information to LBNA, and so it would require at least an additional 45 days. And then if there was not an approval, then I think potentially a lack of the legislature convening in special session would allow in that 90-day period for the administration to move forward with, despite the objections of LBNA, is my understanding.
Ms. Kramer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Laura Kramer, staff to Senator McKinnon. The Senator Von Imhoff, through the chair, the legislature cannot delegate its authority entirely to one committee, so the LBNA committee cannot act on behalf of the entire legislature. Mr. Mitchell is correct, after a 45-day period, if we do not act, if the committee were not to take action and say, no, we don't want that proposal to move forward, and then the legislature were not to call itself into a special session to take official action, the administration could move forward with a pension obligation issuance.
Okay, so let's go.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Okay, so let's assume that LBNA, let's walk down a scenario. Administration presents a proposal, LBNA meets, decides they don't like it. There's a 45-day time where the administration goes back with more information. During that time, the entire legislature convenes in a special session. They look at the extra information. They continue to decide that they don't like it. Then what? Is it a majority? Is it two-thirds? Is it three-quarters? Let's say there's a vote. Then what after that?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I believe it's an introduction of a resolution by the legislature taking official action, telling the administration that they do not support the issuance of the bonds, and therefore they would not be able to issue the bonds.
The administration, through the act of a resolution that is, the legislature creates a resolution that states they are against the bonds, and that is enough to block the moving forward of this bond sale.
Senator Von Imhoff, if I might. Bond sale would be blocked if the legislature raised any flag that they were non-supportive. The market would respond, from my perspective in looking at it, and start raising the interest rate on the bond if they didn't think there was the support of the legislative body backing the payments. So a resolution certainly should stop it. I believe that the governor, in response to the legislature being uncomfortable, quietly decided to stop the proceeding of issuance of those bonds. So I think that we're happy to have conversations with legal to appropriately outline a process for you, but this is it's an issuance of a bond where creditors who purchase those bonds are going to extract interest rates if there's any kind of margins to be had on it. And the only way arbitrage works is if you can get the lowest interest rate, which means the legislature, from my perspective in walking through this during last year's calendar year, it wouldn't take very much to disrupt the market.
So I actually appreciate that, and I do remember that this occurred, and I think that you are right that there's going to be a response or an action or a reaction by the market that could stymie these efforts. But I think it may be worth pursuing just to see if there is a final legal backstop that the legislature can have, because if the markets decide not to, for whatever reason, to respond quickly enough during this 45 to 90 day window that we have, then it may not be enough to actually stop this train from going forward. So I would feel comfortable if there was a mechanism.
Senator Von Imhoff, you are certainly welcome to offer an amendment and craft an amendment. As I said, I'll reintroduce the bill. Hopefully by Friday, so that we have a bill but it should be this similar language. If you have any concerns or questions on this, happy to take it on. Please remember that we are trying to reduce something that is on the books and that the governor has veto power. And so whatever balance we strike, we need to acquire it. It is my hope to acquire passage this legislative session through two different bodies and have this bill on the governor's desk for signing. So if the governor believes that you are taking away or that we are taking away power, then he may veto the bill. So we would have to have a supermajority then to override the governor. This bill is crafted in a way to respond to the environment that we work in that is very political.
Through the chair,
I would
imagine that if this legislature convened in special session in objection to the proposed issuance, that it would have a significant impact on the marking of the bonds. As you pointed out, I believe the legislature could also change the law in special session and eliminate the authority to issue bonds, and thereby providing a hard stop on the process.
Mr. Mitchell, that goes to the point for this bill as far as a compromise, in that the governor, I am well aware that we could do that. We were aware that we could do that last year that we could call ourselves in. The governor has veto power, which means that very few folks need to agree with the seated governor to do this. This bill is trying to strike a balance between our unfunded liability that this could be used against and that ratio. It's a step in the right direction, I believe, as Senator Dunleavy said earlier. If we, it is my opinion that if we try to take too much, that the action could be in jeopardy of veto, as is any other bill. That is not to say that we shouldn't go forward with what we believe is in the best interest of the people of Alaska. So, again, if there are amendments, craft them, the language, we'll just reintroduce the bill as a finance committee bill and then move forward from there. Are there other questions on the structure? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kramer, maybe you're not the one to answer this, but last time we considered something like this, can the Finance Committee from one of the bodies essentially stop it by saying we're not going to appropriate the funds for the bonds that are going to be issued?
Senator Olson, through the chair, effectively.
Maybe you're not the person to ask that. Maybe that's a legal question, but that was one of the considerations during this last go-around.
Legally, no, they wouldn't be able to stop it single-handedly.
Even if they don't appropriate?
It would require the legislature as a whole to not appropriate. Senator Olson, through the chair.
Mr. Mitchell.
Through the chair. So the only thing that's being pledged with these bonds is the state's word that it's going to pay. If the Senate Finance Committee or the House Finance Committee in isolation were to put forward a decree that they were not, or a resolution that they were not going to support payment on the bonds, I mean, we had 79 investor meetings, basically in a variety of locations, to assure investors that the state of Alaska was as good as its word and that these bonds were going to get paid every time because that's the only way they're going to buy them. And if you're saying you're not going to support them and you're not going to appropriate, well, I just lost faith. I mean, if I do buy them, I need more yield, and I'm more likely out because I've seen Detroit. I've seen other issuers. I can see Puerto Rico right now. That there are concerns about obtaining, or there have been failures to obtain payments when they are subject to appropriation, when they are at the discretion of the issuer rather than a general obligation of the issuer. So, yeah, you would be able to stop the issuance by having that type of an action of the Senate Finance Committee.
Mr. Mitchell, and should a Finance Committee not pay its debt, what would the ramifications be inside of the credit market for Alaska?
They would be very negative. The state would expect to receive significant downgrade of its credit rating, be locked out of the capital markets for some significant period of time. Because you know, the basis of credit is man's faith in fellow man, right? You believe that somebody's going to do what they say and they're going to pay you back. If somebody doesn't pay you back, well, I just lost my faith. You no longer can be trusted. And that's true on the individual level, and it's true at the state level, maybe even more so. We would have significant negative impact.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, this is an interesting discussion because I believe Senator Olson is correct. If we said we have no intention of appropriating an appropriation bill, the deal is not going to go through. Why would the governor force a deal before he got LBNA to say yes? Because if LBNA says no, I mean, at the very least, I would probably offer an amendment to this, that if LBNA says no, that they forward a letter to the Finance Committee saying we don't agree with this, and we would strongly suggest you don't appropriate, so then the deal's dead, is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So the only way this works is if the governor gets agreement through LBNA under this bill.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, yes, I think the bill further establishes the partnership that exists between the legislative branch and executive branch in any issuance of this type.
Madam Chair, one however, and that's Senator Von Imhoff is looking for a further check. And in a way, I tend to agree with her because we had a situation about 2 years ago with Medicaid expansion in which we had a discussion that under the Executive Budget Act, the governor just took it upon himself to take on federal funds and add a new program that we don't know where that's going to end up. So it's kind of a, I think the more checks, the better, but I appreciate the fact that I think LBNA could scuttle it and then send us a letter if they believe that it's not in the best interest of the state of Alaska.
Senator Bishop.
Oh, it's a great discussion. Talking about the state's ability to pay and credit ratings and whatnot, I think any financial world looks with what the Senate did and the legislature as a whole 3 years ago when we put a $3 billion deposit into the system. I think we're all committed to doing the right thing. There's nobody going to welch on the bets. And there were some people that wanted to put a bigger draw in, and if we'd have done that, we probably wouldn't even be having this discussion today on this bill right here.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. I would say that if we would have issued pension obligation bonds in 2007 when this bill passed, that the arbitrage would have worked to the benefit of Alaskans, which is what Senator Bishop is just alluding to. If we would have issued last year's bonds, right now at least, for 1 year in, Alaska would have seen a positive return. So while the legislature can't tolerate the risk, Mr. Mitchell is obligated on behalf of the people of Alaska to run the numbers and make a recommendation based on what exists in state statute for the benefit of the people. And they made that recommendation last year under the authority given to them in 2007. So because the legislature doesn't have that tolerance, this administration pulled back and did not advance. And just to underscore, Alaska would have received a positive number. We would owe less in our unfunded liability. We would have a lower number if we would have executed the transaction that the governor had brought before us. But there is risk associated with arbitrage, and that's not to say that even 2007, over the course of 20 or 30 years, that you still wouldn't see what other states or other cities have experienced if there was a loss in the market. Thank you so much to all committee members for sharing your thoughts about this issue. It is a practical issue that we have policy choices before us to act upon, and we want to do what's in the best interest of Alaska. This proposal is one step closer to less risk to the state, but still allow the administration, if the market presented itself again, to talk to a new legislative body and propose under the terms that they may be able to get another issuance if they want to. But there are many members that are concerned about the use of arbitrage to handle the unfunded liability. With that, brief at ease. We're back on the record. For those watching off-net, online, or at home, we are discussing Senate Bill 97, an act related to pension obligation bonds. The current proposal before us is to take a $5 billion pension obligation bond limit and move it to $2.5 billion and provide a notification process for the administration to the legislature, a more formalized process. Senator Olson, you still had a question on pension obligation bonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mitchell, as you looked at, as you rode through, you've been here for a while, so you've been through several administrations where sometimes the relationship between the, I remember when I first got here in 2000, the tension between the administration and the legislature was at a level that I have not seen since, and thank God it hasn't been that way. But going back to what's there before, and I guess that's the reason I'm bringing out the idea that, you know, they're going to be, we're here now, and there are going to be people in the future that are going to be sitting in our spots, and there are going to be people on the third floor that are there. But I'd like to go back to what one of the issues that was brought up by Senator Bishop having to do with the Kansas situation that has essentially turned upside down for them. Mm-hmm. Because pension obligation bonds are given different parameters depending on what kind of legislation that is put forth there, could you just comment on that and how that compared to the POBs that we were looking at last fall compared to the Kansas ones?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Olson. So I don't have specific information on the state of Kansas deal, but generally there, as you indicated, there are a variety of ways that people have structured and used pension obligation bonds, and some of them we would call conservative, and some of those we would call grasping at straws. So in some instances, like the state of Illinois, they've borrowed money to fund that year's contribution into the trusts. And so instead of making a contribution, they borrow that money. So they take a short-term expense and make it into a long-term liability. Mm-hmm. So that's grasping at straws. In other instances, they put a deposit. They make the deposit into the trust, but then they obligate the trust to pay the debt service. And now the bet is within the trust. And in those instances, it's less favorable to the impact on the funded status of the trust, because you have now a liability that went along with the assets that were used into the system. There's the cost of capital. So that, again, as I referred to earlier, what's the one thing that you can control? Because this obviously relies on the future and the arbitrage between the rate that you earn on the invested assets and your cost of capital, the cost of capital. So what can you do? All you can do is try to get the lowest cost possible. And so that's been a focus of mine as we've looked at pension obligation bonds, is and there's actually a requirement in the legislation already that there be a certain spread, a 1.5% spread between the actuarially assumed rate of return and the cost of capital on the borrowed funds. And so that variety of things is going to impact how Kansas's experience played out. In our instance, these could be ideas that you consider incorporating into your legislation, that the state of Alaska was actually pursuing, for what I would personally consider the conservative structuring. The benefits of the issuance that we were contemplating this last fall would have been the most significant in the final year of the transaction. So 23 years from now, it cut the payment, the actuarially assumed payment, in half. In the first year, the benefit was fairly modest. And so the benefit grew each year that we went through time. And so that's beneficial from a long-term perspective. You're not pitching and chucking, they call it, when you borrow short to pay, or borrow long to pay a short-term expense. There could be additional restrictions on the allowed cost of capital, in my view. That hamstrings us a little bit if we think there's a market that, you know, if you make the rate 5% and we're at a 5%, makes it very difficult to proceed. But certainly maybe 6.5% is too high. And that's worth discussing, in my view, if you're looking at the legislation. And I guess the funding status is another thing. We don't want to become overfunded within the trust. Right now, we could fully fund. I mean, you could borrow $5 billion and put it all into TERS and overfund TERS if an executive branch wanted to do that for some unknown reason. I don't think they would. But there isn't any requirement that you not fund beyond X percent within the trust. And so those types of bookends could all be considered when you're looking at this legislation.
May I continue, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
So you're saying the measures that were put in place last fall were adequate to go ahead and keep us out of the Kansas situation?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, my view, yes. We had a cost of capital below 4%, and we had a structure that wasn't trying to take long-term savings and to project them to today, but to save them for tomorrow where they would actually accrue. It was the proper structure.
So back last fall, we had a different administration back in Washington, D.C. The stock market was where it was at. Is it indeed true that, as was pointed out by the co-chair of finance, that maybe we made a mistake by not issuing those bonds because there was such a positive upturn?
Through the chair, Senator.
And this is looking at it because we're doing, there'll be another administration after the Trump administration, and the stock market will still be there. I'm looking from your standpoint as an expert in that field who's dealing especially with obligations that the state's going to be there long after many of us are even still alive. Was it indeed oversight that we should have acted?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't know. The time will tell over the long haul. At this point, as the chair pointed out, the transaction would have been financially successful. And again, the one thing, I work in debt, and so the one thing you can control is the debt. And a sub 4% interest rate, we were probably, I mean, we didn't get to the actual point of establishing an interest rate, but we were at like a 390 and 3.9%, and looking at significant investor demand for bonds that was going to allow us to reduce interest rate. And so let's say we wound up at a 3.8%. That would have been the lowest rate that any POB issuer that I'm aware of has achieved. These are taxable rates. And so that would have given us the one part of the formula we can control that would have led to the highest probability of success.
My last question, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Has to do with, as was pointed out by one of the other senators, that another set of eyes to go ahead and go through it. But isn't that the problem with government? You've got so many obstacles to overcome to try and get things done, as opposed to the private sector, where when the boss says this is going to be happening, right or wrong, and I come from the private sector, and I've had to eat some of those things. Is it a good thing indeed to have another set of eyes, especially made up by LBNA, which is made up of people that don't have, the bulk of people who do not have any owner, who have never owned a business that had to make tough decisions? I mean let's face it, LBNA is made up of a bunch of politicians that are, for good or better, whatever else. With that, Mr. Chair, without Mr. Bitchell, Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Or maybe you don't want to answer the question because of the way it was phrased, but that's the problem that I see.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it is a trick question. nimbleness is a virtue in the financial markets. Being able to act quickly is obviously something, strike while the iron's hot. That's something that can be viewed as a strength. There has to be a balance in government, and so that's where you can get to the point of being comfortable with the checkoff process to ensure that an executive branch, let's say an executive branch did propose to borrow, let's say the current year's contribution was $500 million, and the executive branch said, hey, let's just borrow it, and borrowed the money in preparation for their budget, so it's already borrowed. The money's sitting in the bank. It's waiting to be deposited. Oh, we got next year's contribution. We just borrowed it over a 23-year amortization. So then that's too much, maybe, because that would be, in my view, a bad decision.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Von Imhoff.
While the market may have appeared conducive for a bond transaction for a period of time. We did have the top economist for ConocoPhillips present to us yesterday, who brought up very compelling evidence such as the strong dollar, the European potential exit, Brexit being the first, and others are talking about it, global trade agreements, whether the U.S. is in or out, which will have multiple year ramifications. These things affect economic markets more than just oil and gas as well. And she indicated that there are a lot of unknowns that whether you're a business owner or a career politician may or may not be able to have the savviness to predict. Even she, the top economist, said that it's anybody's guess. You made a comment, time will tell. Commonwealth North had a presentation earlier by one of our top economists in the state of Alaska that had a look back of about 40 years, and there were small snippets of time where these pension obligation bonds worked. Senator McKinnon referenced a couple, and they did in fact work, but it's small snippets of time, and they usually not, they don't last within the entire bond cycle of the actual trade that occurred. This is either here nor there. I feel comfortable when you have Greenspan coined irrational exuberance. We cannot trust the markets to behave accordingly and respond in a way that makes sense. It doesn't always do that. So, yes, I will be looking to see if an amendment makes sense that LBNA and the legislature and the administration hopefully will work together to come up with the right solution. But because we are stewards of public money, which means we have to collectively make that decision, and one particular person or administration shouldn't have that type of power or ability with $2.5 billion, that yes, I think we need to have a stopgap in the event that there is some irrational exuberance by the administration. Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Mitchell? Devin, thank you for joining Senate Finance today.
Thanks.
With that, I'd like to set Senate Bill 97 aside. Again, for the general public, we plan on reintroducing, hopefully on Friday, the same bill under the title for the Senate Finance Committee. With that, we'll set it aside. And if you were here for our brief at ease, what was happening is we had an afternoon schedule that would have considered the pension obligation bond again and movement of Senate Bill 32, which is an act relating to biological products, relating to the practice of pharmacy, relating to the Board of Pharmacy, and providing for an effective date. With pension obligation bonds off the table for this afternoon, I inquired with the Senate Finance Committee if they were comfortable with, under bills previously heard, advancing Senate Bill 32 and canceling this afternoon's meeting to free up their time for other committee work. Senators have agreed to that. I would like senators to pull out before them Senate Bill 32, an act relating to biological products, and invite Senator Hughes and her staff to the microphone. We did cover the fiscal note on this bill last time we heard it. The public hearing was opened and closed. Senator Hughes.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Shelley Hughes, representing District F, Palmer Chugiak, and I'm available to answer any questions or explain anything about the bill if there's still need for that.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hughes, one of the questions that has come to my mind has been the response from the rural health care providers out there, most of which are 638 contractors under IHS, and they're working with the health corporations. Have they voiced any position on this?
We have heard no opposition from them. As you heard yesterday, The ASHNA did put it out, and there was no opposition. Also, we talked to the Alaska State Medical Association because they have physicians that are working in the various tribal health organizations, and there was no opposition expressed from any of them through the chair. Thank you.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Are we ready to move the bill? Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 32, version 30-LS0188-J from committee with committee recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there objection to moving Senate Bill number 32, an act relating to biological products? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 32 moves from committee. Brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We're back on the record. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we conclude today's meeting? Seeing and hearing none, we did advance what was scheduled for this afternoon, so this afternoon's meeting is canceled. We're on bills previously heard on Friday morning, so I just want to notify the public, and we will send out an announcement on that that we will bring back up Friday morning at 9 a.m., Senate Bill 54, Crime and Sentencing, and Senate Bill 55, Omnibus Crime Bill, which finishes our schedule for this week. So Friday afternoon's meeting will be canceled, and Saturday morning's meeting is canceled. So it will advance our schedule. So good job, team, for getting things done quickly. With that, we're adjourned.